Okay, first I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation to come here and the opportunity to tell you about the results that we had, that we obtained in Innsbruck. And I'm sorry that I will give a transparency talk, of course, with all these fancy computer talks of yesterday. I wanted to do it as well, and I've been fighting a losing battle against the computers this morning to transfer the file to my laptop. So this was not possible, and I will do it the old-fashioned way. I hope this can be read somehow. So the topic of my talk is separability and distillability for Gaussian states. And this was work done in Innsbruck in the group of Ignacio Sirak, together with Barbara Krauss, and in collaboration with Gazzola and Luming Duan in Innsbruck, and Magic Levenstein in Hanover. And while I'm still registered here as an Innsbruck member from Innsbruck, I'm now in the Max Planck Institute in Garching, as well as Ignacio and Barbara. So first I want to say a few words to remind you about separability and distillability and why we care about these things, why we want to discuss these properties for Gaussian states, and then derive conditions to show what kind of Gaussian states are distillable and what kind of Gaussian states are separable. Both these properties of separability and distillability capture a very fundamental distinction that occurs among quantum states of composite systems. And so there is a fundamental reason to understand what states are separable, what states are distillable. And in addition, we've seen in the quantum information field that these fundamental distinctions also have many practical implications. As I've listed here, so that you can, using inseparable entangled states, you can not only disprove local realism, but you can all try to do all these fancy quantum communication, computation procedures that one would like to implement. And therefore, it is interesting to be able to tell which states are separable and therefore not so interesting because they contain only classical correlations, and which states do contain actual quantum correlations and are inseparable. However, it is not clear that all inseparable states can actually be used for these quantum protocols, and therefore the notion of distillability has its importance as well, because distillable states are those that can, at least in principle, be put to use in quantum communication situations. These are a stronger property than inseparability, and it means, for example, that if you have many of these distillable states, you can find a sub-ensemble of these many states that does indeed violate local realism, and you can find a sub-ensemble that is useful for teleportation, communication, or cryptography, as was mentioned yesterday also in Rüdiger Schack's talk. And so it is also of importance to identify these valuable quantum states, and one can draw a very rough sketch of state space of composite systems. There are the separable states, distillable states, and there are undistillable, but might be undistillable, but inseparable states. And basically what one would like to do is to be able to detect this border, right, to tell to which of these sets a given state, to tell to which of these sets a given state belongs. And this is, should give some, just remind you of the definition of separability, which basically a state is called separable if it is a mixture of product states, so if you can write it in a way like this. But for a general mixed state, this is a very hard property to ascertain. And so one is looking for reformulations of this that one can just plug in the state into some algorithms and get out the answer, yes, it is separable, or no, it is not separable. And the important step towards this was the relating these separable states or inseparable states to positive maps. And it was done by Horodetsky, showing that a state is separable if and only if for all positive maps P. And I take P on one of the two subsystems, the identity on the other of the two subsystems, apply this composite map to the composite state, it should get a positive operator as a result. This is necessary and sufficient for separability, but since the positive maps are a very little understood topic in mathematics, this doesn't help a lot because, well, one doesn't know and cannot characterize all the positive maps, except for the case of qubits, and there is just one positive map that one has to look at. But every positive map that there exists produces a test for inseparability. So I take a positive map, take a state, I get something with negative eigenvalues out here, and this proves that the state is inseparable. And you may be familiar with the transposition map, which is the easiest and so far most important positive map, which just does the transposition in one of the two subsystems, and as the Hordetskys showed after a Paris conjecture for qubits and one three-level system, even this one positive map is sufficient to prove, necessary and sufficient for to a certain inseparability of a given state. So if I find if rho is not larger than zero after I apply transposition tensor one, then rho is entangled, and if it is positive, it is separable. But in general, the question is open, and this has been called the separability problem. So the task is to find a necessary and sufficient condition for separability that can be checked by a simple direct computation for any given state. So no more thinking or anything. Can I maybe find a product state decomposition just taking the density matrix, plugging it in somewhere, and out comes an answer, yes or no? This is what one would like to have. And the only case where such a criterion is known for the whole space is, as I said, space of two qubits or one qubit and one three-level system, and there I just have to calculate the partially transposed density matrix. And it was shown that for higher dimensional states, this partial transposition is not enough. There are entangled states for which partially transposed states, the state is positive. You know, PPP entangled states. And so the task that actually remains can be visualized in this sketch here. We have the NPT states, which are certainly entangled. There are separable states, and there are PPT entangled states. And we have to find a way to detect this border between PPT entangled states and separable states. Good. So this was separability, and I do a quick reminder also of distillability before I can get going. So the distillability problem is basically the same, only that now our the property of the state that we want to distinguish is distillability. Distillability means that I can take a large number of copies of a given state, apply local bipartite state, apply local quantum operations on both sides, maybe correlated by classical communication, and I want to transform this collection of states into at least a single copy of a system that then is as close as I wish to a maximally entangled pure state. The question is, can I do this or not? And it was shown by the Hordetsky family that there are entangled states for which this is not possible. So it is indeed a question to be addressed. Even if I know that the state is inseparable, can I do something like this with a state and make it therefore useful, because typical protocols are formulated for pure states, and if I have a very mixed, even though entangled state, it may not be practical for any task that I wish to do. And since there are states like the PPT entangled states that cannot be distilled and for which there is no known use by their own, so if I have a collection of PPT entangled states, as far as I know, nobody knows whether anything interesting quantumly can be done with them. So we want to find out which states are really good enough to do quantum communication. And here again, no, except for the qubit case of two qubits, no, one qubit and one n-level system, no general criterion is known. For the qubits, positive and negative partial transposition is not only necessary and sufficient for inseparability, but also for distillability. So all entangled states of two qubits can also be distilled. But in higher dimensions, starting from C3, tensor C3, this is no longer the case. And the one example are the PPT entangled states. I had not so good luck with technology today, but okay. So the PPT entangled states certainly are undistillable, so they are one thing that we want to sort out. And there has been an interesting conjecture that is still open, whether there are also states that have negative partial transpose, but are nevertheless undistillable. And there is strong numerical evidence that this might be the case. And if it would be the case, it would imply this non-convex shape of the set of undistillable states. So, and it would also imply a non-convexity of certain entanglement measures. And therefore, this is an interesting question whether there are NPT-bound entangled states. Okay, most of the work done on these questions has been in finite dimensional systems, so Cn times Cm. And since a couple of years ago, the continuous quantum variables have become interesting for quantum communication by experiments done at Caltech mainly, and the nice unconditional teleportation experiment. And more recently, also by results from Preskill and Gottesman, I think, about how to, theoretical results, how to use the high bandwidth available in infinite dimensional systems to do very efficient quantum key agreement using squeezed states, using continuous variable states. So the question that we want to address in the talk is what continuous variable states are distillable and are inseparable. And of course, in general, continuous variables or infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces imply all the finite dimensional cases as well, and this is an open problem which we cannot solve as well. But there is one class of continuous variable states that is much easier to address, and that is also of heightened importance because it is experimentally very well accessible, and these are the Gaussian states that basically all the states that can routinely be produced in the laboratory. I would say maybe this is no longer true, but still, this is a class of great practical importance. And so Gaussian states are states that live on infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces and that are completely determined by the expectation values and the variances of the canonical observables, the X and P observables, the quadrature observables here. So all the higher moments of these variables are determined by these first two moments. And this means that this infinite dimensional state is nevertheless described by a very small number of parameters. And these are a family of states that we want to address in the following. And as I said, they are relevant for quantum communication, in particularly because they allow the on-demand creation of entangled states, even multi-party entangled states, with which it has been shown that quantum teleportation of coherent states is possible. And they promise a lot of high bandwidth communication because it's a big state, and so if one can only prepare these states well enough, squeeze them strongly enough, then they allow for the transmission of lots of bits or qubits per run. And one does not need to consider the whole density matrix because everything that is important comes from the correlation, so-called correlation matrix, that is the expectation values of quadratic expressions in the X and P, the field quadratures. So the correlation matrix is defined as here. The R's are the X and P operators, and so once I have determined all the expectation values of these expressions here. I know the correlation matrix, and then I know all that is of interest of the state, because the linear expectation values, they can always be put to zero by applying local operations, local unitary operations to the state. So the following, just consider Gaussian states that are completely characterized by one real symmetric matrix gamma that has two n plus m square matrix that arranges these expectation values. And now there are it's a simple way to characterize all the valid correlation matrices of these Gaussian states. And so instead of talking about density matrix in the following, I will just talk about correlation matrices. And when I say a correlation matrix is separable, I mean the state that has this correlation matrix is separable, and so on. And there was a very useful result by Werner earlier this year that showed that such a correlation matrix is separable if and only if I can find a product state correlation matrix, gamma A plus gamma B, such that this gamma is larger than this product state correlation matrix. This means that a Gaussian and separable Gaussian state can always be written as a mixture of Gaussian product states, because this here is the correlation matrix of a Gaussian product state, and if this inequality holds, I can always construct a decomposition in terms of Gaussian states with this correlation matrix. But it's in general not easy to, given a 2n by 2n matrix, to see whether there is a block diagonal matrix that lies below it, and that in addition satisfies these requirements here. So it's not a criterion. There is still work to be done to be able, for a given correlation matrix, to decide whether it is separable or not. And this is what I want to show you now. We use this condition that Werner gave to derive a directly computable separability criterion for all Gaussian states. And this is done in the following way. One defines a sequence of gamma of correlation matrices gamma n that can be obtained, or start from gamma 0. This is the one that we want to find out about, whether it's separable. And from this, by iteration of a map, we can define the sequence of correlation matrices gamma n with the following properties. Well, we can calculate them from another. Gamma n plus 1 is separable if and only if gamma n is separable. So the separability property is kept along the way. It is not, and also, and if gamma n is inseparable, then the this is the point I should have added here. If gamma n is inseparable, then gamma n plus 1 is either inseparable or it is invalid. So it is not even a good correlation matrix. And the last fact that is a bit qualitative here, if we do this often enough, then separability or inseparability will be easy to see from these matrices. And I will tell you in the following what this means. So here is the definition of the sequence. I just take the correlation matrix and write it in block form, where this is the block that corresponds to Alice's nodes of the system, the x and p operators that are measured at Alice's location. These are the x and p at Bob's location, and there are, of course, correlations between the two. And then this is just the mathematical procedure, how to obtain gamma n plus 1 from gamma n. And I will discuss later on a bit what this means. At first it is just a mathematical procedure, but there can be found some interpreted little way. And so this is the main theorem here about the sequence of matrices defined that way, that if gamma n is separable, if and only if gamma n plus 1 is separable. And I think the proof is not involved, it's just linear algebra, but I don't know if I should walk you through this. So there are two lemmas about positive matrices that one needs to use, and the two theorems that I showed earlier. The definition of when is a correlation matrix valid and when is a correlation matrix separable. So and then it's just juggling around. So if there is interest, I have transparencies for this, but I think I leave it for questions. Okay, now we have this sequence of correlation matrices, but what have we actually gained from this? So what we can do now, we have a long string of correlation matrices, and for each element of this sequence, we can check some sufficient conditions for either separability or inseparability, and hope that if we do this all along the way, then this will sum up to a necessary and sufficient condition. And there are two simple conditions that can easily be checked. So whenever I can find an n such that this Alice block an is not a valid correlation matrix, then clearly the whole thing cannot be a valid correlation matrix, because this A is basically describes the reduced state of Alice if Bob's system is discarded. And so Alice needs to have a valid state if the whole state is valid, because discarding a subsystem is a allowed operation. So this is this means the correlation matrix is not valid, and therefore, because of the equivalence that we had, the state must have been inseparable. Gamma naught must have been inseparable. Same thing here. If we can see that gamma this an is not only valid, but there is even some space between an and this matrix ij, then this means that we can, from this one, can prove that there is indeed a block diagonal matrix gamma a plus gamma b that lies below gamma n. And therefore, one can prove from this condition that gamma n is separable. And therefore, because of the equivalence that we have shown, gamma 0 must have been separable. And so these are two simple conditions. There is no more thinking involved. But of course, it doesn't help us a lot if we have to calculate an infinite number of simple inequalities in order to decide whether a state is separable or not. So the question is, does this work fast? Do we have this only finitely many times or a few times in order to get a definite result? Because if neither of the two inequalities holds, then we don't know. We have to just iterate. And so the what remains to be shown to make this complete is that either one of these conditions does actually hold after finitely many steps. And first, to encourage or discourage ourselves, we did short numerical runs, and we see that normally 4 or 5 iterations do lead to a result. So, and even in the most demanding cases that we could cook up, the thing was sort of just as we got very, very close to the border, it sort of goes with a logarithm of the distance to the border between separable and inseparable states, and we never managed to need more than 30 iterations for a result. But this is not what we want. I mean, there should be an analytical proof of this, and this is the last part of this first part of the talk. So one can analytically show that indeed after after a number of steps that is proportional to 1 minus a distance of the correlation matrix from the border, either 1 or 2 is fulfilled. And so the proof goes like this. If we don't take a general correlation matrix, but one which fulfills in addition this condition, so the gamma A must be something finite in between gamma A and this IJ matrix for some finite positive epsilon, then one can show that only n of epsilon steps, and this proportional to the inverse of epsilon, leads to a proof that this matrix is indeed separable, that the condition 2 is fulfilled. And so this means, apart from a set of measure 0 along the border, inside the set of separable states, we come to a definite answer after after a finite number of steps. And if the density matrix, the correlation matrix, was inseparable, then one can cannot apply this argument, but one can use a different strategy, using the fact that the set of inseparable matrices is open, and we can just add a small epsilon plus one to the state, to the correlation matrix gamma zero. This is still a valid correlation matrix, and now by the by this part, we should, after n of epsilon steps, get the answer that the state is really separable, provided that gamma naught is separable. So we, if gamma naught is separable, then this gamma tilde is of this type. And therefore, after n of epsilon steps, we should get the answer, yes, it is separable. However, when this gamma naught is not separable, then this does not necessarily hold. And so we would find, if we find a contradiction, if after n of epsilon steps, we do not get a definite answer here, then this shows that the state is indeed inseparable. And so again, except for states very, very close to the border, if we, so if we do, say, n of epsilon, we fix this. We say we are ready to go 500 steps. And then there is a very tiny strip around the border between the separable and inseparable states, where after 500 steps, we will not be able to make any definite answer. But for all the other states, we can say whether the correlation matrix is separable or not. And while this is here sort of springs in the eye, this border effect, it is clear that in all separability criteria, if one gets very, very close to the border, there will be numerical problems. So if I want to calculate negative partial transpose, and I have a matrix whose negative eigenvalue is very, very close to zero, this means I have to calculate very, very accurately in order to really apply this criterion in this circumstance. And so the same fact is here. If I'm extremely near to the border, then I will have to do a very long calculation. But once I'm away from it, a small number of iterations will prove the point. So this allows now, given any n plus m correlation matrix, to run it through this iteration and to get, except for this region at the border, to get an answer, is it separable or not? And one can make this border as small as one desires, I don't know, adapt it to the accuracy of the experiment, that one doesn't know really exactly what the correlation matrix is anyway. And the interesting thing, well, these correlation matrices are all directly accessible to experiment and apparently can be read also very, can be determined quite accurately. So this is sort of ready for use, this criterion. And okay, so the second property that I would like to discuss briefly is the distillability of Gaussian states. We know now which states are inseparable, but which ones can really be used to make maximally entangled states. And the theorem that I want to sketch the proof of is following, that n by m, so a Gaussian state where Alice possesses n modes and Bob possesses m modes is distillable if and only if it has a non-positive partial transpose. So here the same applies as to the case of qubits, that positive partial transpose is not only necessary but also sufficient for distillability. That it is necessary was shown a while ago by the Horodetsky family, by showing that you cannot, by local operations, you can never change, you can never make a positive partial transpose negative. So if you do physical operations at Alice and Bob's place, positive partial transpose remains positive, whatever you do. And so if we want to obtain a maximally entangled state which has a negative partial transpose, we need to start out with a negative partial, non-positive partial transpose state. And this, the proof of this theorem proceeds in three steps. First, we take just one mode at each side, and we take a symmetric state in which the reduced states of both Alice and Bob are the same. So actually, it means we just need the local temperatures or local entropies to be the same. And then I can use this the reduction criterion that was proved by the Horodetskys in 98 or 99. That is, the following statement. If I can find a state psi such that this operator here, grace B of rho tensor identity minus rho, let's put it the other way. This is this here, rho is mapped to trace B of rho tensor 1 minus rho, is a positive but not completely positive map, as one can easily convince oneself. So this is something, it is P, the positive map tensor, the identity, because on the Bob side, just the identity happens. But because of this minus operation here, it means that there is a this is a positive but not completely positive map. And so if rho is separable, then this should always be positive. And so it is a separability criterion. For example, if I find a state such that this is negative, it means that this state rho cannot be separable. But in addition, as Horodetsky shows, it's also a criterion for distillability, because if I can find a state such that this here, this expression is negative, then I can also give a procedure how to distill this state. So I can tell what kind of measurements I need to do on the state rho, local measurements, local unitaries, in order to distill pure singlets out of this state. And the fact is that it's straightforward to be checked by computation, that for these symmetric Gaussian states that have non-positive partial transpose, this state here does indeed lead to a negative value for this expression. So I take a two-mode squeezed state that has this form here, and I get a negative value for this expectation value, and therefore I can make a certain so this implies that then I have to do a local projective measurements, and then I have a state that that I can distill. And the next two steps are basically showing to how to reduce the more general case to this case. So if I have a 1-by-1 NPT state that is no longer symmetric, then there is a way of symmetrizing it by local operations. So I need to do basically just a beam splitter and a homodyne measurement on one of the two sides. This is, in some sense, it's trying to cool down the state. So I take a pure Ancilla state and apply a beam splitter between here, Bob's part, and this vacuum state. And then I do a homodyne measurement of one of the outputs of this beam splitter. And if the beam splitter is the transmittivity of the beam splitter is chosen appropriately, the resulting state will be symmetric, and therefore and the NPT property will not be changed. And therefore, I can then use a part one of the proof to show distillability. And because this is just local operations, this is allowed in distilling a state. And the last step is that if I have an N by M state, so N and M modes, that is NPT, then I just need to do a local unitary operation that transforms the many modes at Alice and Bob's place in such a way that this non-positive partial transpose is mapped to one, to the first mode, basically, the correlations between the first mode of Alice and the first mode of Bob. So just one can calculate a local squeezing transformation that one has to do, that Alice has to do, that Bob has to do, and then they can just forget about all but their first system, just throw them away, and the resulting Gaussian state will be still a state with non-positive partial transpose, and will therefore be distillable by the second part of the proof. So, okay. Well, originally I thought I would talk about three-partite case as well, but since this is on the computer and the time is up anyway, I guess we're all happy, and I come to the conclusions. So the main part of the talk was a separability problem for Gaussian states. The separability problem, sort of, except for the, I want to mention one more reason why one should be interested in finding criteria. I mean, on the one hand, it's interesting just to be able to decide which states have this fundamental property of inseparability and which do not have it. And so which states we might be able to use for quantum communication, or which states we may not be able to use. The second thing is, of course, its relation to positive mass, which is a long-standing mathematical problem, which is basically equivalent to, I mean, if we find a solution to the separability problem, the positive map problem would be solved as well. And there might be a third, more practical reason to do this. There are many labs, I think, in the world that try to produce entangled states, and they do produce entangled states, but usually these states are not pure, but mixed. And now the question is really, what do we have to measure to be certain that the state that we have produced is indeed an entangled state? And this is here for Gaussian states, one way to so measure the correlation matrix and run it through this iterative algorithm, and then you have a positive answer, whether a definitive answer, whether it is entangled or not, whether it is distillable or not. And so there is this, and this map that I use, or this iterative procedure, can be seen as a generalized form of a positive map. It is related to a nonlinear positive but not completely positive map, and this opens up a new approach to studying the separability problem by using now nonlinear positive maps instead of linear positive maps that have been used so far. And to end, I just draw the sketch, a simple sketch now for the Gaussian states. So there are separable and PDT entangled states, but there are no bound entangled NPT states, and so the structure of these Gaussian N by M mode states is like this. And thank for your attention. Well, I mean, non-Gaussian states also have a correlation matrix, and so if you can still use this criterion as a sufficient criterion for inseparability. But what happens with non-Gaussian states is that many strongly entangled states have very non-entangled correlation matrices. So if you take, for example, the maximally entangled two-qubit state, so 0, 0 plus 1, 1, then it has a correlation matrix that is block diagonal or something. So it's so you have just sufficient criterion for inseparability there, and it's I don't know a way to attack this problem in general.
Do you have a for the
tripartite case? One can find a different procedure that solves the case of one mode, n modes, but for and of course, I mean, in the many-partite case, you have all this hierarchy of entanglement problems, and the open problem is to, for example, in the three-party case, if I have n modes, to say, I can of course decide now whether a state is separable in the A B C way or A C D way. But whether it is, if it is not separable in either of these ways, then there are these two possibilities of it being fully separable, or it being inseparable, PPT entangled, so that you cannot write it as a product of rho A, tensor rho B, tensor rho C, a mixture of such states. And there, I don't know a way, we don't know a way of solving this in general, except for the case of one by n.